waited. The heat in her skin was painful, not excruciating. What was worse was the constant effort to stay awake. One moment's forgetfulness and her breathing stopped. Lights started to go off in her head with increasing speed, and she had to open her eyes wide and shake her head to turn them on again. At the same time, this necessary wakefulness was a blessing. It stopped her from having to think. All her mental energy went to keeping herself awake. There was no room for hesitation, regret, an alternative. The nurse came in at exactly 8 o'clock. When she opened her mouth to say, "Good morning, how are we today?" or whatever it was that nurses said in the morning, Virginia hissed, "Shh." The nurse closed her mouth with a surprised click, and she frowned when she walked through the dim room to Virginia's bed, leaned over her, and said, "And how..." "Shh," Virginia whispered.
"Sorry, but I don't want to wake him up."
She made a gesture with her head in Laka's direction. The nurse nodded, said in a lower voice,
"No, of course not, but I need to take your temperature and a little blood." "Sure, whatever. But could you take him out first?"
"Take him? Do you want me to wake him up?"
"No, but if you could roll him out while he's still sleeping."
The nurse looked at Laka as if to determine if it was physically possible, then smiled, shook her head, and said,
"I think this will be all right. We'll take your temperature orally, so you don't have to feel..." "It's not that. Couldn't you just do what I'm asking?"
The nurse cast a glance at her watch. "You'll have to excuse me, but I have other patients, and I..." Virginia snapped as loud as she dared.
"Please!"
The nurse took half a step back. She had clearly been informed of Virginia's actions during the night. Her eyes quickly went to the bindings holding Virginia's arms. She appeared to be reassured by what she saw, went back up to the bed. Now she talked to Virginia as if she was weak in the head.
"You see, we need, in order to be able to help you get better again, just a little..."
Virginia closed her eyes, sighed, gave up. Then she said,
"Would you be so kind as to open the blinds?"
The nurse nodded and walked over to the window. Virginia took the opportunity to kick off the blanket, exposing her body, held her breath, kept her eyes tightly shut. It was over. Now she wanted to turn off. The same function she had been resisting all morning, she now consciously tried to let forth. But she couldn't. Instead, she experienced that thing you heard about, seeing your life pass before you like a strip of film in fast forward. The bird I had in the cardboard box, the smell of freshly mangled sheets in the laundry room, my mother leaning over the cinnamon bun crumbs, my father, the smoke from his pipe, Pear, the cottage, Lena and I, the big mushroom we found that summer, Ted with mashed blueberries on his cheek, Laka, his back. Laka. A clattering noise as the blinds were raised, and she was sucked down into a vortex of fire. Oscar's mum had woken him up at 7:10, as usual. He had climbed out of bed and had breakfast, as usual. He had put his clothes on and then hugged his mum goodbye at 7:30, as usual. He felt like normal. Filled with anxiety, dread, sure, but even that wasn't unusual when he was heading back to school after the weekend. He packed his geography book, the atlas, and the photocopy he had not finished. Was ready at 8:25. Didn't need to leave for 15 minutes. Should he sit down and do that worksheet anyway? No, didn't have the energy. He sat down at his desk, stared at the wall. This must mean he wasn't infected. Or was there an incubation period? No, that old man, that had only taken a few hours. I'm not infected. He should be happy, relieved. But he wasn't. The phone rang.
Elay, something has happened to...
He shot up from the table, out into the hall, grabbed the receiver.
Hi, this is Oscar.
Oh, hello there.
Dad. It was only Dad.
Hi.
Well, so, you're at home.
About to leave for school.
Right, in that case I won't... Is your mother home?
No, she's left for work.
I see. I thought as much.
Oscar got it. That was why he was calling at this strange time, because he knew Mum wasn't home. His dad cleared his throat.
So, I was thinking about what happened Saturday night. It was a bit unfortunate.
Yes.
Yes. Did you tell your mother about what happened?
What do you think?
There was silence on the other end, the static crackle from 100 kilometres of telephone lines, crows sitting on them, shivering, while people's conversations darted past under their feet. His dad cleared his throat again.
You know, I asked about those ice skates and it worked out. You can have them.
I have to go now.
Yes, of course. Hope you, have a good day at school.
Okay, bye.
Oscar put the receiver down, picked up his bag, and left for school. He felt nothing. 5 minutes left until the lesson started, and some students were standing in the corridor outside the classroom. Oscar hesitated for a moment, then tossed his bag onto his shoulder and walked towards the door. All eyes turned towards him.
Running the gauntlet. Gang attack.
Yes, he had feared the worst. Everyone knew what had happened to Johnny on Thursday, of course, and even though he couldn't pick Johnny's face out of the crowd, it was Micah's version they had heard on Friday. And Micah was there, with his idiot grin pasted on his face, like usual. Instead of slowing down, preparing to escape in some way, he lengthened his stride, walking quickly towards the classroom. He was empty inside. He didn't care what happened anymore. It wasn't important. And sure enough, a miracle occurred. The sea parted. The group assembled outside the door broke up, created room for Oscar to get to the door. He had not expected anything else, actually. If it was because of some strength emanating from him, or because he was a stinking pariah who had to be avoided, it didn't matter. He was different now. They sensed it and slunk back.
Oscar walked into the classroom without looking to either side, sat down at his desk. He heard murmuring from the corridor, and after a few minutes they streamed back in. Juhan gave him the thumbs up when he walked past. Oscar shrugged. Then the teacher came in, and 5 minutes after the lesson started, Johnny arrived. Oscar had expected him to have some kind of bandage over his ear, but there wasn't anything. The ear was, however, dark red, swollen, and didn't look like it belonged to his body. Johnny took his seat. He didn't look at Oscar, didn't look at anyone.
He is ashamed. Yes, that must be it.
Oscar turned his head to look at Johnny, who pulled a photo album out of his backpack and slipped it into his desk. And he saw that Johnny's cheeks had turned bright red, matching his ear. Oscar thought about poking his tongue out at him, but decided against it. Too childish. Tommy started school at 8:45 on Mondays, so at 8 o'clock Staffan got up and had a quick cup of coffee before he went down to have his man-to-man talk with the boy. Yvonne had already left for work. Staffan himself was supposed to report for duty at 9 in Judan to continue searching the forest, an undertaking he sensed would be fruitless. Well, it would feel good to be outside, and it looked like the weather was going to be decent. He rinsed the coffee cup under the tap, deliberated for a moment, then went and put on his uniform. Had considered going down to see Tommy in his normal clothes, talk to him like a normal person, so to speak. But strictly speaking, this was a police matter, vandalism, and anyway, the uniform imbued him with a shell of authority that he, although he didn't think he lacked in his everyday person, nonetheless, well. And anyway, it was practical to be ready for work since he was heading there after this. So Staffan pulled on his work clothes, the winter jacket, checked in the mirror to see the impression he made, and found it pleasing. Then he took the cellar key that Yvonne had left for him on the kitchen table, closed the door, checked the lock, work habit, and walked down the stairs, unlocked the door to the cellar. And speaking of work, There was something wrong with this door. No resistance when he turned the key. The door could simply be opened. He crouched down and checked the mechanism. Aha! A wad of paper. A classic trick of burglars. Make up some excuse to visit a place you wanted to rob, tamper with the lock, and then hope the owner wouldn't notice it when they left. Staffan unfolded the blade of his pocket knife, picked out the piece of paper. Tommy, of course. It didn't occur to Staffan to wonder why Tommy needed to rig the lock of a door that he had a key to. Tommy was a thief who hung out here, and this was a thief's trick. Therefore, Tommy. Yvonne had described where Tommy's hangout was, and while Staffan walked in that direction, he prepared the lecture he was going to give. He had considered taking the pal route to take it easy, but this thing with the lock had made him angry again. He would explain to Tommy, explain, not threaten, about juvenile detention facilities, social services, the age at which you could be legally tried as an adult, and so on. Just so he understood what kind of path he was about to head down. The door to the storage unit was open. Staffan looked in. Well, what do you know? The bird has flown the coop. Then he saw the stains. He squatted and dabbed his finger into one of them. Blood. Tommy's blanket lay on the couch, and even that had the odd blood stain on it, and the floor was, he saw now on looking for it, covered in blood. Alarmed, he backed up out of the unit. In front of his eyes, he now saw a crime scene. Instead of the lecture he was to have delivered, his mind started to flip through the rulebook for handling a crime scene. He knew it by heart, but as he was proceeding through the paragraphs, immediate recovery of such material as may otherwise be lost, note the exact time, avoid contamination of locations where traces of fibres may potentially be recovered, he heard a faint murmur behind him, a mumbling punctuated with muffled thuds. A stick was threaded through the wheels of the locking mechanism of the safety room. He walked over to the door, listened. Yes, the mumbling, the thuds were coming from in there. It almost sounded like a mass, a recited litany that he could not make out the words to. Devil worshippers? A silly thought, but when he looked closer at the stick in the door, it actually frightened him because of what he saw at the very tip. Dark red, lumpy streaks that reached about 10 centimetres up the stick itself. It looked exactly like knives did when they had been used for violent altercations and had partly dried. The muttering on the other side of the door continued. Call for reinforcements? No. Perhaps there was something criminal going on behind that door that would be completed while he was upstairs making the call. Had to manage this on his own. He undid the fastening on his holster for easy access to his gun, unhooked the baton. With his other hand, he took a handkerchief from his pocket and carefully wrapped it around the end of the stick and started to pull it out of the wheels while he listened closely to see if the scraping sound from the stick altered the noises from inside the room in any way. No, the litany and the thuds continued. The stick was out. He propped it up against the wall in order not to destroy any prints. He knew that the handkerchief was no guarantee that prints would not be erased, so instead of grabbing the wheels, he used 2 stiff fingers on one of the spokes and forced it to turn. The wheel pistons gave way. He licked his lips. His throat felt dry. The other wheel was turned back all the way, and the door slid open 1 centimetre. Now he heard the words. It was a song. The voice was a high-pitched, broken whisper.
274 elephants on a teensy spider, whee!
Thud.
Ib, they thought it was such jolly good fun that they went and got a friend. 275 elephants on a teensy spider, whee!
Thud.
Ib, they thought it was...
Staffan angled the baton away from his body, pushed the door open with it, and then he saw. The lump that Tommy was kneeling behind would have been hard to identify as human had it not been for the arm that stuck out of it, half separated from the body. The chest, stomach, face were only a heap of flesh, guts, crushed bone. Tommy was holding a square stone with both hands that he, at a certain point in his song, thrust down into the butchered remains. There was little resistance, and the stone mostly went all the way through and hit against the floor with a thud before he lifted it up again, and yet another elephant was added to the spider web. Staffan could not tell for sure that it was Tommy. The person holding the stone was covered in so much blood and tissue scraps that it was difficult to... Staffan became intensely nauseated. He restrained a wave of nausea that threatened to overwhelm him, looked down in order not to have to see, and his eyes stopped at a tin soldier lying by the threshold. No, it was the figure of the pistol shooter. He recognized it. The figure was lying in such a way so the pistol was aimed straight up. Where is the base? Then he realized. His head spun, and, oblivious to fingerprints and crime scene protocol, he leaned his hand against the doorpost for support, while the song continued repetitively.
277 elephants on...
He must be pretty shaken up, because he was hallucinating. He thought he saw... Yes, saw clearly how the human remains on the floor, between each blow, moved, as if trying to get up. Morgan was a chain smoker. He was already putting out his butt in a flowerbed outside the hospital entrance when Larry still had half of his left. Morgan pushed his hands down into his pockets, walked to and fro in the parking lot, swore when water from a puddle seeped in through the hole in his shoe and made his sock wet.
"Got any money, Larry?" "As you know, I'm on disability and..." "Yeah, yeah, but do you have any money?"
"Why? I'm not going to lend you any if that's..."
"No, no, no, but I was thinking, Laka, what if we were to treat him to a real, you know..."
Larry coughed, looked accusingly at the cigarette.
"What, to cheer him up, you mean?"
"Yes."
"No, I don't know."
"What? Because you don't think it'll make him feel better, or because you don't have any money, or because you're too cheap to put out?"
Larry sighed, took another puff, coughing, then made a face and put the cigarette out with his foot, then picked up the butt and put it in a sand-filled receptacle, looked at his watch.
"Morgan, it's 8:30 in the morning." "Yes, I know, but in a couple of hours, when stuff opens..." "No, I have to think about it." "So you have money. Should we go in or what?"
They walked in through the revolving door. Morgan pulled his hands through his hair and walked up to the woman at the reception desk to find out where Virginia was, while Larry went and looked at some fish that were swimming sleepily through a large bubbling cylindrical tank. After a minute, Morgan came back, rubbed his hands over his leather vest to wipe off something that had stuck to him.
"Damn bitch, didn't want to tell."
"Oh, well, must be in intensive care."
"Can you get in there?"
"Sometimes."
"You seem like you know what you're doing."
"I do."
They moved in the direction of the intensive care unit. Larry knew the way. Many of Larry's acquaintances were in or had been in the hospital. At the moment, there were two here at Sub, excluding Virginia. Morgan suspected that people Larry had only met briefly became acquaintances or even friends only at the moment they landed in the hospital. Then he sought them out, went for visits. Why he did this, Morgan had just been about to ask when they reached the swinging doors of the ICU, pushed them open, and caught sight of Laka at the far end of the corridor. He was sitting in an armchair, in only his underpants. His hands were clutching the arms of the chair while he stared into a room in front of him where people were hurrying in and out. Morgan sniffed. "What the hell? Are they cremating someone or what?" He laughed.
"Damn conservatives. Budget cuts, you know. Let the hospitals take over the..."
He stopped talking when they reached Laka, whose face was ashen, his eyes red and unseeing. Morgan sensed what must have happened, let Larry take the lead. Wasn't good at this kind of thing. Larry walked over to Laka, put a hand on his arm.
"Hey there, Laka. How's it going?"
Chaos in the room closest to them. The windows visible from the door were wide open, but despite this, the sour smell of ash drifted out into the corridor. A thick cloud of dust was floating through the air. People were standing in its midst, talking loudly, gesturing. Morgan caught the words, "Hospital's responsibility," and "We have to try." What they had to try he didn't hear, because Laka turned to them, staring at them like they were two strangers, and said,
"Should have realized."
Larry leaned over him.
"Should have realized what?"
"That it would happen."
"What's happened?"
Laka's eyes cleared, and he looked towards the foggy, dreamlike room, said simply,
"She burned."
"Virginia?"
"Yes. She went up in flames."
Morgan took a couple of steps towards the room, peeked in. An older man with an air of authority came over to him.
"Excuse me, this is not a public exhibition."
"No, no, I was just..."
Morgan was about to say something witty about looking for his boa constrictor, but dropped it. At least he had had time to see. Two beds, one with wrinkled sheets and a blanket thrown to one side as if someone had gotten out of it in a hurry. The other was covered with a thick grey blanket that stretched from the foot end to the pillow. The wood of the headrest was covered with soot. Under the blanket you could see the outline of an unbelievably thin person. Head, chest, pelvis were the only details you could make out. The rest could just as well be folds, irregularities in the blanket cloth. Morgan rubbed his eyes so hard that his eyeballs were pressed a little into his head.
"It's true. It's fucking true."
He looked down the corridor, looking for someone to work through his confusion on. Caught sight of an older man leaning against a walker, an IV stand next to him, trying to get a glimpse into the room.
"What are you looking at, you old fool? Want me to kick your walker out from under you too?"
The man started to retreat in tiny steps. Morgan balled his hands into fists, tried to control himself, remembered something he had seen in the room, turned abruptly and went back. The man who had spoken to him was on his way out.
"Excuse me, but what..."
"Yes, yes, yes."
Morgan shoved him out of the way.
"Just getting my friend's clothes for him, if that's all right. Or do you think he should keep sitting out there in the buff?"
The man crossed his arms over his chest, let Morgan pass. He grabbed Laka's clothes from the chair next to the unmade bed, threw another glance at the other bed. A charred hand with outstretched fingers poked out from under the sheet. The hand was unrecognizable. The ring that sat on the middle finger was not. Gold with a blue stone. Virginia's ring. Before Morgan turned away, he also noted that a leather strap was fastened across the wrist. The man was still standing in the door, his arms crossed.
"Happy now?"
"No. But why the hell was she restrained like that?"
The man shook his head.
"You can let your friend know the police will be here shortly, and they will no doubt want to talk to him."
"What for?"
"How should I know? I'm not the police."
"No, of course not. Easy to make that mistake, though, isn't it?"
Out in the corridor, they helped Laka get into his clothes, and had just finished when two police officers arrived. Laka was completely spaced out, but the nurse who had pulled the blinds up had enough presence of mind to be able to vouch that he had had nothing to do with it, that he had still been sleeping when the whole thing began. She was comforted by one of her colleagues. Larry and Morgan led Laka out of the hospital. When they had gone through the revolving front door, Morgan drew a deep breath of the cold air, said,
"Sorry, have to bath,"
leaned over the flower beds and deposited the remains of last night's dinner, mixed with green slime, over the bare bushes. When he was done, he wiped his mouth with his hand and dried his hand on his trousers. Then he held up the hand as if it were Exhibit A and said to Larry,
"Now look here, you're fucking gonna have to cough up."
They made their way back to Blackberry, and Morgan was given 150 to spend at the bottle shop while Larry took Lacquer back to his place. Lacquer allowed himself to be led. He had not said a single word the whole time they were on the subway. In the lift up to Larry's apartment on the sixth floor, he started to cry. Not quietly, no. He wailed like a kid, but worse, more. When Larry opened the lift door and pushed him out onto the landing, the cry deepened, started to reverberate against the concrete walls. Lacquer's scream of primal, bottomless sorrow filled the stairwell from top to bottom, streamed through the letter slots, keyholes, transformed the high-rise into one big tomb erected in the memory of love, hope. Larry shivered. He had never heard anything like it before. You don't cry like this. You're not allowed to cry like this. You die if you cry like this. The neighbours, they're going to think I'm killing him. Larry fumbled with his keys while thousands of years of human suffering, of helplessness and disappointments that for the moment had found an outlet in Lacquer's frail body, continued to pour out of him. The key finally made it into the lock, and with a strength he had not believed he possessed, Larry carried Lacquer into the apartment and closed the door. Lacquer continued to scream. The air never seemed to give out. Sweat was starting to form on Larry's brow. What the hell should I... In his panic, he did what he had seen in the movies. With an open hand, he slapped Lacquer's cheek, was startled by the sharp slapping sound, and regretted it in the same moment that he did it. But it worked. Lacquer stopped screaming, stared at Larry with wild eyes, and Larry thought he was going to get hit back. Then something softened in Lacquer's eyes. He opened and closed his mouth, like he was trying to get some air, said, "Larry, I..." Larry put his arms around him. Lacquer leaned his cheek against his shoulder and cried so hard he was shaking. After a while, Larry's legs started to feel weak. He tried to untangle himself from the embrace so he could sit down on the hall chair, but Lacquer hung on to him and followed him down. Larry landed on the chair, and Lacquer's legs buckled under him. His head sank down onto Larry's lap. Larry stroked his hair, didn't know what to say, just whispered, "There, there. There, there." Larry's legs had fallen asleep when a change occurred. The crying had given way to a soft whimpering when he felt Lacquer's jaws tense up against his thigh. Lacquer lifted his head, wiped away the snot with his sleeve, and said, "I'm going to kill it."
"What?"
Lacquer lowered his gaze, stared right through Larry's chest, and nodded.
"I'm going to kill it. I'm not going to let it live."
During the long recess at 9:30, both Staffa and Juhan came over to Oscar and said, "Great job, and fucking awesome." Staffa offered him chewy candy bars, and Juhan asked if Oscar wanted to come with them and collect empty bottles one day. No one shoved him or held his nose when he walked past. Even Mika Siskov smiled, nodding encouragingly, as if Oscar had told him a funny story when they met outside the cafeteria. As if everyone had been waiting for him to do exactly what he did, and now that it was done, he was one of them. The problem was that he couldn't enjoy it. He noted it, but it didn't affect him. Great not to be picked on anymore, yes. If someone tried to hit him, he would hit back. But he didn't belong here anymore. During math class, he raised his head and looked at the classmates he had been with for 6 years. They sat with their heads bent over their work, chewing on pens, sending notes to each other, giggling. And he thought, but they're just kids. And he was also a kid, but he doodled a cross in his book, changed it to a kind of gallows with a noose. "I am a child, but..." He drew a train, a car, a boat, a house with an open door. His anxiety grew. At the end of math class, he couldn't sit still. His feet banged on the floor, his hands drummed against his desk. The teacher asked him, with a surprised turn of her head, to be quiet. He tried, but soon the restlessness was there again, pulling at the marionette threads, and his legs started to move on their own. When it was time for the last class of the day, gym class, he couldn't stand it any longer. In the corridor, he said to Juhan,
"Tell Avila I'm sick, okay? Are you taking off, or what? Don't have my gym clothes."
This was actually true. He had forgotten to pack his gym clothes this morning, but that was not why he had to cut class. On the way to the subway, he saw the class line up in straight rows. Thomas shouted, "Boo!" at him. Would probably tell on him. Didn't matter. Not in the least. The pigeons fluttered up in grey flocks as he hurried across Vellingbool Square. A woman with a stroller wrinkled up her nose in judgment at him, someone who doesn't care about animals. But he was in a hurry, and all the things that lay between him and his goal were mere objects, were simply in the way. He stopped outside the toy store. Smurfs were arranged in a sugary, cute landscape. Too old for stuff like that. In a box at home, he had a couple of big gym dolls that he had played with quite a bit when he was younger, about a year or so ago. An electronic doorbell sounded as he opened the door. He walked through a narrow aisle where plastic dolls, Kriegsmen, and boxes of building models filled the shelves. Closest to the register were the packages with molds for tin soldiers. You had to ask for the blocks of tin at the counter. What he was looking for was stacked on the counter itself. Yes, the imitations were stacked under the plastic dolls, but the originals, with the Rubik's logo on the packaging, they were more careful with. They cost 98 kroner apiece. A short, pudgy man stood behind the counter with a smile that Oscar would have described as ingratiating if he had known the word.
"Hello! Are you looking for anything special today?"
Oscar had known the cubes would be stacked on the counter, had his plan figured out.
"Yes, I was wondering about the paints, for tin."
"Yes?"
The man gestured to the tiny pots of enamel paint arranged behind him. Oscar leaned over, putting the fingers of one hand on the counter just in front of the Rubik's cubes, while the other hand held his bag that was hanging open underneath. He pretended to search among the colours.
"Gold, do you have that?"
"Gold, of course."
When the man turned around, Oscar took one of the cubes, popped it into his bag, and had just managed to return his hand to the same place when the man came back with two pots of paint and placed them on the counter. Oscar's heart was beating heat up into his cheeks, across his ears. "Met or metallic?" The man looked at Oscar, who felt how his whole face was a warning sign on which it was written, "Here is a thief." In order not to draw attention to his red cheeks, he bent over the tins, said,
"Metallic, that one looks fine."
He had 20 kroner. The paint cost 19. He got it in a little bag that he scrunched into his coat pocket so as not to open his school bag. The kick came as usual when he was outside the store, but it was bigger than normal. He trotted away from the store like a newly freed slave, just released from his chains. Could not help but run to the car park, and with two cars shielding him, carefully opened the packaging, took out the cube. It was much heavier than the imitation he owned. The sections slid smoothly, as if on ball bearings. Perhaps they were ball bearings. Well, he wasn't planning to take it apart and examine it, risk destroying it. The box was an ugly thing made of transparent plastic, now that the cube was no longer in it, and he threw it into a rubbish bin. The cube looked better without it. He put it in his coat pocket to be able to caress it, feel its weight in his hand. It was a good present, a great goodbye present. In the entrance to the subway station, he stopped.
"Ifile thinks that I..."
Yes. That he, by giving Ile a present, somehow accepted the fact that Ile was leaving. Give a goodbye present, over and done with. Goodbye, goodbye. But that wasn't how it was. He absolutely didn't want. His gaze swept across the station, stopped at the kiosk, at the rack of newspapers, the Expressen paper. The whole first page was a picture of the old guy who had lived with Elay. Oscar walked over and flipped through the paper. 5 pages were devoted to the search in Judan Forest, the ritual killer, background, and then yet another page where the photo was printed. Håkan Bengtsson. Karlstad. Unknown whereabouts for 8 months. Police turning to the public, if anyone has observed. Anxiety dug its claws into Oscar. Someone else who might have seen him, known where he lived. The kiosk lady leaned out through her window. "Are you buying it or not?" Oscar shook his head, tossed the paper back into its place. Then he ran. It was only once he was down on the platform that he remembered he hadn't shown his ticket to the ticket collector. He stomped his feet on the ground, sucked on his knuckles, his eyes welled with tears. "Come on, please, subway train, come on!" Lacquer half lay on the sofa, squinting at the balcony, where Morgan was trying to coax over a bird that was sitting on the railing, without result. The setting sun, exactly behind Morgan's head, spread a halo of light around his hair.
"Come on! Come, come, I won't bite!"
Larry was sitting in an armchair, half watching a public education course in Spanish. Stiff people, in obviously rehearsed situations, walked across the screen, said, "Yo tengo un bolso."
"¿Qué hay en el bolso?"
Morgan bent his head so Lacquer got the sun in his eyes and closed them while he heard Larry mutter,
"¿Qué hay en el bolso?"
The apartment reeked of stale cigarette smoke and dust. The bottle was empty, lying on the coffee table next to an overflowing ashtray. Lacquer stared at a couple of burn marks on the table left after carelessly extinguished cigarettes. They slid around before his eyes like meek beetles.
"Una camisa y pantalones."
Larry chuckled to himself.
Pantalones.
They had not believed him. Or rather, yes, they had believed him, but refused to interpret the events in the way that he did. "Spontaneous combustion," Larry had said, and Morgan had asked him to spell it. Except for the fact that the case for spontaneous combustion is about as well documented and scientifically proven as vampires. That is to say, not at all. But of 2 equally implausible scenarios, you probably choose to believe the one that demands the least amount of action on your part. They were not going to help him. Morgan had listened seriously to Lacquer's account of what happened at the hospital, but when he got to the part about destroying the cause of all this, he had said,
"So you mean we should become vampire killers? You and me and Larry, with stakes and crosses and... No, sorry, Lacquer, but I'm having a little trouble seeing it, is all."
Lacquer's immediate thought when he saw their disbelieving, dismissive faces had been, "Virginia would have believed me." And the pain had sunk its claws into him again. He was the one who had not believed in Virginia, and that was why. He would rather have spent a couple of years in jail for mercy killing than have to live with the image he had seared on his retina. Her body writhing in the bed as her skin blackens, starts to smoke, the hospital gown that rides up over her stomach, revealing her genitals. The rattle of the metal bed frame as her hips move, heaving up and down in infernal copulation with an invisible being, as flames appear on her thighs. She screams, and the stench of singed hair fills the room, her terrified eyes on mine, and 1 second later they whiten, start to boil, burst. Lacquer had drunk more than half the contents of the bottle. Morgan and Larry had let him.
Pantalones.
Lacquer tried to get up off the couch. The back of his head weighed as much as the rest of his body. He steadied himself against the table, heaved himself up. Larry stood up to give him a hand.
"Lacquer, damn it, sleep a while."
"No, I have to get home."
"What do you have to do there?"
I just have to do something.
But it's nothing to do with the stuff we were talking about, is it?
No, no. Morgan came in from the balcony while Lacker was teetering out towards the hall.
Hey, you, where do you think you're going?
Home.
Then I'll walk you there.
Lacker turned around, making an effort to shore himself up, appear as sober as possible. Morgan walked over to him, his hands out in case Lacker fell. Lacker shook his head, patted Morgan on the shoulder.
I want to be alone, okay? I want to be alone, that's all. Are you sure you can make it?
I'll manage. Lacker nodded a few more times, got hung up on this movement, and had to consciously put an end to it so he wouldn't be stuck standing there, then turned and walked out into the hall, pulling on his coat and shoes. He knew he was very drunk, but he had experienced this state so many times that he knew how to unhook his movements from his brain, perform them mechanically. He would have been able to play pick-up sticks without his hands trembling, at least for a short while. He heard the others from inside the apartment.
Shouldn't we? No, if that's what he wants, we should respect it.
But they came out into the hall to see him off, hugged him clumsily. Morgan took him by the arms and bent down to look him in the eyes.
You're not going to do anything stupid, now are you? He said. You have us. You know that.
Yes, I know. Of course I won't. Once he was outside the high-rise apartment building, he came to a standstill, looked up at the sun resting in the top of a pine tree. We'll never again be able to... The sun... Virginia's death, the way she had died, hung like a lead weight in his heart, in the place his heart had been, made him walk doubled over, compressed. The afternoon light in the streets was a mockery. The few people moving around in it, a mockery. Voices, speaking about everyday things as if all over at any moment. It can happen to you too. Outside the kiosk, a person had leaned against the window, was talking to the owner. Lacker saw a black lump fall from the sky, attach itself to the person's back, and... What the hell? He stopped in front of the rows of headlines, blinked, tried to focus properly on the photo that filled the available space. The ritual killer. Lacker snorted. He knew better what this was actually about, but... He recognized that face. It was at the Chinese restaurant, the man who bought him the whiskey. Could it? He took a step forward, looked at the picture more closely. Yes, it was. The same close-set eyes, the same... Lacker put his hand to his mouth, pressed his fingers to his lips. The images whirled around, attempted connections. He had let him buy him drinks... The one who killed Yucca. Yucca's killer had lived in the same building complex as him, only a few doors down. He had greeted him a couple of times. He had... But he wasn't the one who did it. That must have been... A voice said something.
Hi, Lacker. Someone you know, or what?
The owner of the kiosk and the man outside were both looking at him.
Yes...
Lacker said, and started to walk again towards his apartment. The world disappeared. In his mind's eye, he saw the doorway the man came out of, the covered windows of the apartment. He was going to get to the bottom of this. He was. His pace quickened and his spine straightened. The lead weight that beat against his chest made him tremble, resolve thundering through his body. Here I come. By Jove! Here I come. The subway train stopped at Rockstar, and Oscar chewed his lips impatiently with a touch of panic, thought the doors stayed open too long. When there was a click on the speaker system, he thought the driver was about to announce a delay, but...
Step away from the doors. The doors are closing.
And the train pulled away from the station. He had no plan beyond warning Elay,
that anyone at any time could call the police and say they had seen the old guy in Blackberry, in that building, in that stairwell, in that apartment. What happens if the police, if they break down the door, the bathroom? The train rattled across the bridge and Oscar looked out the window. Two men were standing down at the lover's kiosk, and, half covered by one of the men, Oscar could still discern the row of hateful front-page headlines blown up and printed on yellow flyers. The other man walked quickly away from the kiosk. Anyone can recognize him. He could know. Oscar was already up and standing by the doors when the train started to slow down. He pushed his fingers through the rubber lips between the doors, as if that would make them open faster, and leaned his forehead against the glass, cool against his hot skin. The brakes started to squeal, and the driver must have been distracted, because only now did he announce, "Next stop, Blackberry." Johnny was standing on the platform, and Thomas.
No, not them.
When the train, rocking, pulled to a halt, Oscar's eyes met Johnny's. They widened, and at the same time as the doors slid open with a hiss, Oscar saw Johnny say something to Thomas. Oscar tensed, threw himself out through the doors, and started to run. Thomas's long leg flicked out, hooked his, and Oscar fell headlong onto the platform, scraping the palms of his hands when he tried to break his fall. Johnny sat on his back.
"In a hurry to get somewhere?"
"Let me go! Let me go!"
"Why should we?"
Oscar shut his eyes, balled his hands into fists, took a couple of deep breaths, as deep as he could with Johnny's weight on his chest, and said into the concrete,
"Do whatever you want, then let me go."
"Okie dokie."
They grabbed him by his arms and pulled him to his feet. Oscar caught a glimpse of the station clock, 2:10. The second hand hacked its way around the face. He tensed the muscles in his face, in his stomach, tried to make himself like a rock, impervious to blows.
Just let it be over fast.
It was only when he saw what they were planning to do that he started to struggle. But as if by silent agreement, both of them had twisted his arms around, so that every movement made it feel as if his arms were going to break. They forced him towards the edge of the platform.
They wouldn't dare. They can't.
But Thomas was crazy, and Johnny. He tried to brace himself with his feet. They danced across the platform, while Thomas and Johnny led him up to the white line that marked the start of the drop to the tracks. Some hair on his left temple was tickling his face, fluttering from the gust of wind coming out of the tunnel as the train from the city approached. The track started to hum, and Johnny whispered,
"You're going to die now, you understand?"
Thomas giggled, gripped him even harder by the arm. Oscar's mind went completely still.
They're really going to do it.
They pushed him so his upper body was hanging out over the tracks. The lights on the approaching train projected an arrow of cold light over the tracks. Oscar jerked his head to the left and saw the train come hurtling out of the tunnel. Bum! The train's signal sounded, and Oscar's heart leapt in its death throes at the same time as he wet his pants, and his last thought was,
"Elay!"
Before he was pulled back, his field of vision filled with green when the train rushed past a few centimetres in front of his eyes. He lay on his back on the platform, his breath coming in puffs of smoke from his mouth. The wetness in his groin grew colder. Johnny squatted next to him.
"Just so you get it, how things are going to be around here. Understand?"
Oscar nodded instinctively.
Put an end to it. The old impulses.
Johnny gingerly touched his injured ear, smiled. Then he put his hand across Oscar's mouth, pushed his cheeks together.
"Squeal like a pig, if you get it."
Oscar squealed, like a pig. They laughed.
"He was better at it before,"
Thomas said. Johnny nodded.
"We'll have to start training him again."
The train on the other side arrived. They left him. Oscar lay where he was for a while, empty. Then a face came floating through the air in front of him. Some lady, She was holding her hand out to him.
You poor dear. I saw the whole thing. You have to report them to the police. That was...
The police?
Attempted murder. Come, I'll help.
Oscar ignored her hand and jumped to his feet. While he was limping towards the doors, up the stairs, he could still hear the lady's voice.
Are you sure you're all right?
The cops. Laka winced when he walked into the courtyard and saw the patrol car parked in the corner. Two police officers were standing outside the car. One was writing something on a pad. He assumed they were after the same thing as himself, but that their information source was not as good. The officers had not noticed his hesitation, so he kept going to the first entrance in the row of buildings, walked in. None of the names on the wall told him anything, but he knew where to go anyway. Ground floor to the right. Next to the basement door there was a bottle of tea red. He stopped, looked at it, as if it could give him a clue as to what he should do next. Tea red is flammable. Virginia went up in flames. But the thought stopped at that point, and he only felt that dry, screaming rage again, continued up the stairs. A shift had occurred. Now his mind was clear and his body clumsy. His feet slipped on the steps, and he had to steady himself with the railing to manoeuvre up the stairs while his brain clearly resonated. I go in, I find it, I drive something through its heart, then I wait for the cops. He stood in front of the door with no nameplate. And how the hell am I going to get in? As a kind of joke, he tossed out one arm and felt the door handle. And the door opened, revealing an empty apartment. No furniture, rugs, paintings, no clothes. He licked his lips. It's gone. There's nothing for me here. There were two more bottles of tea red on the floor in the hall. He tried to decide what that meant. That this creature drank... No. That only means that someone has been here recently. Otherwise that bottle back there would be gone. Yes. He stepped in, stopped in the hall and listened. Heard nothing. Did a quick round of the apartment, saw there were blankets hanging in the windows in several rooms. Understood why. Knew he was in the right place. Finally, he stood in front of the bathroom door. Pushed the door handle down. Locked. But this lock was no problem. All he needed was a screwdriver or something like that. Again, he concentrated entirely on his movements. To perform the movements. He shouldn't think beyond that. No need to. If he started thinking, he would hesitate, and he wasn't going to hesitate. Therefore, movements. He pulled out the kitchen drawers, found a kitchen knife, walked to the bathroom, inserted the blade into the handle, and turned it clockwise. The lock gave way. He opened the door. It was pitch black in there. He groped for the light switch, found it, turned it on. God help us. Damned if it isn't. The knife fell out of Laka's hand. The bathtub in front of his feet was half filled with blood. On the bathroom floor were several large plastic jugs whose translucent plastic surfaces were smeared with red. The knife clattered against the tile floor like a little bell. His tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth as he leaned forward to... To what? To investigate it? Or something else, something more primal, the fascination of such quantities of blood, to dip his hand into it, to bathe his hands in blood. He lowered his fingers against the still dark surface and plunged in. His fingers appeared to be severed, disappeared, and with a gaping mouth he lowered his hand until it felt... He screamed, pulled back. He quickly drew his hand out of the bathtub, and drops of blood flew in an arc around him, landing on the ceiling, walls. In a reflex motion, he put his hand over his mouth, only realized what he had done when his tongue, lips, registered the sweet stickiness. He spat, dried his hand on his pants, put the other clean hand over his mouth. Someone's lying down there. Yes. What he had felt under his fingertips had been a belly that had yielded under the pressure of his hand before he pulled it out. In order to stave off the feeling of revulsion, he scanned the floor, found the knife, picked it up, and squeezed the shaft. What the hell am I... If he had been sober, he would perhaps have left at this point, left this dark tarn that could be concealing just about anything under its once more still, polished mirror surface. A butchered body, for example. The stomach is maybe... It maybe is just a stomach. But the intoxication made him merciless even to his own fear, so when he saw the thin chain that led from the edge of the bathtub down into the dark liquid, he stretched out his hand and pulled on it. The plug was pulled out down there. There was a filtering, clucking sound from the pipes, and a faint whirl formed on the surface. He knelt in front of the bathtub, licked his lips, felt the harsh taste on his tongue, spat on the floor. The surface became gradually lower. A sharply delineated dark red edge became visible along its highest level. It must have been here a long time. After a minute, the contours of a nose appeared at one end. At the other, a set of toes that, as he watched, became 2 half-feet. The vortex on the surface became narrower, stronger, positioned exactly between the feet. His gaze crept along the child's body that was gradually being revealed. A couple of hands folded across the chest, kneecaps, a face, a muffled slurp as the last of the blood drained out. The body in front of his eyes was dark red, blotchy, and slimy like a newborn. It had a navel, but no genitals. A boy or a girl? It didn't matter. When he looked closely at the face with its closed eyes, he recognized it only too well. When Oscar tried to run, his legs froze up, refused. During 5 desperate seconds, he had really believed that he was going to die, that they were prepared to push him. Now his muscles were having a hard time getting past the idea. They gave out in the walkway between the school and the gymnasium. He wanted to lie down, tip back into those bushes, for example. The jacket and his lined pants would protect him from sharp twigs. The branches would provide gentle support. But he was in a hurry. The second hand, its staccato progress along the clock face. The school. The red-brown, sharp-edged brick facade of stone laid against stone. In his thoughts, he swooped like a bird along the corridors into the classrooms. Johnny was there. Thomas sat at their desks and smiled mockingly at him. He bent his head, checked his boots. The shoelaces were dirty, one about to become untied. A metal hook towards the top had been bent open. He walked slightly pigeon-toed. The leather imitation on both shoes was slightly stretched at the heels, worn to a shine. Even so, he was going to be wearing these boots all winter, most likely. Cold in his wet pants. He lifted his head. I won't let them win. I won't let them win. Warmth streamed into his legs. The straight masonry lines of the brick facade dropped away, were rubbed out, disappeared as he started to run. His legs stretched out, the dirt squelched and sprayed up around his feet. The ground flowed out from under him, and now it felt as if the earth was turning too fast. He couldn't keep up. His legs took him stumbling past the high-rises, the old consume store, the coconut factory, and with his speed in combination with old habits, he rushed into the courtyard, past Ile's door, and straight to his own building. He almost ran into a police officer who was heading the same way. The officer opened his arms, received him.
"Hey there! You're in quite a hurry!"
His tongue stiffened. The officer let go of him, looked at him with suspicion.
"Do you live here?"
Oscar nodded. He had never seen this police officer before. Admittedly, he looked quite nice. No, he had a face that Oscar would normally think looked nice. The officer pinched his nose and said,
"You see, something's happened here, in the building next door. So now I'm going door to door around here asking if anyone's heard anything or seen anything."
Which building? The officer nodded his head towards Tommy's building, and the immediate panic left Oscar.
That one? Well, not in the building, per se, more like the basement. You wouldn't have happened to hear or see anything unusual around there the past few days?
Oscar shook his head, his thoughts spinning so chaotically that he technically wasn't thinking anything at all, but he suspected his anxiety was shining from his eyes, fully visible to the officer. And the officer did incline his head, scrutinizing him.
How are you doing?
Fine.
There's nothing to be afraid of. It's all over now. So there's nothing you need to be worried about or anything. Are your parents home?
No. My mum, no.
Okay. Well, I'm going to be walking around here for a while, so you can always think a little about what you may have seen.
The police officer held the door open for him.
After you?
No, I was going to...
Oscar turned and did his best to walk naturally down the hill. Halfway down, he turned and saw the police officer go into his building.
They've taken Elay.
His jaws started to chatter, his teeth clicking an unclear Morse code message through his bones while he pulled open the door to Elay's building, continued on up the stairs.
Would they have put that kind of tape on the door, sealed it off? Say that I can come in.
The door was ajar. If the police have been here, why did they leave the door open? That wasn't something they did, was it? He put his fingers on the handle, pulled the door open gently, crept into the hallway. It was dark in the apartment. One of his feet bumped into something, a plastic bottle. At first he thought there was blood in the bottle, then he looked and saw it was lighter fluid.
Breathing. Someone was breathing, moving.
The sound came from the bathroom. Oscar walked towards it one step at a time, folded his lips inward to stop his teeth from chattering, and the shivering moved down towards his chin, his neck, the suggestion of an Adam's apple on his neck. He turned the corner, looked into the bathroom.
That's not a policeman.
A man in shabby clothes was kneeling next to the bathtub, his upper body leaning over the rim, outside Oscar's field of vision. He only saw a pair of dirty grey pants, ripped-up shoes with the tips pointed down towards the tiled floor, the hem of a coat.
The old guy. But he's breathing.
Yes. Hissing inhalations and exhalations, almost like sighs, came from the bathroom, and Oscar crept closer without consciously thinking about it. Little by little, he saw more of the bathroom, and when he was almost level with the bathtub itself, he saw what was happening. Laka couldn't do it. The body at the bottom of the tub looked completely defenseless. It wasn't breathing. He had put his hand on its chest and registered the fact that its heart was beating, but only with a few beats a minute. He had been expecting something terrifying, something